Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%. APR, 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rassland, today we have the return of the woman who used to be Lee Tree Lynn.
Hello.
Who was once with BFM, is now doing something completely different.
Just, you know, faffing about.
Yeah. Great to have you back.
Thank you.
And we have the head of the arts stuff at the British Council, Grey Yeo.
It's good to be back.
Good to have you. And our three topics this week are, topic number one will be annoying movie tropes. Topic number two is introverts, colon, are we celebrating them? And finally, topic number three is problematic faves. Mm-hmm. So, annoying movie tropes, folks. Movies are essentially a collection of cliches. And a good movie, I guess, is a movie that minimizes the amount of cliches it uses. And so, movies rely on just tropes to just describe something in shorthand. And I was watching a speech being given by Reese Witherspoon the other day, because that's the kind of guy I am. And she was saying that one thing that really annoys her is when she's watching a movie, something terrible happens in the movie, and the girl character, who has very little dialogue, finally says, "What are we going to do now?" And as Reese Witherspoon pointed out, when have you ever known a woman not to have an opinion on what we should do now? So, for me, annoying movie tropes would be that there's that as well. I mean, female characters rarely seem to have any, given any depth. They're just a prop for the male character's story. Little things as well, like lightning storms. I get so annoyed when I'm watching a movie and there's thunder and lightning, and they only ever happen at dramatic moments in someone's life. I was driving here just now. It was thunder and lightning. It was just regular day. Why doesn't thunder and lightning happen on a regular day?
Another, so there was nothing dramatic in your life at that
time? No. I was coming here. Another annoys me is when Hollywood movies visit a Muslim country, the arrival is always at exactly the same time as the call to prayer. Now, I mean, it happens five times a day, so I guess, you know, statistically there is a high chance. But there are other times of the day when the call to prayer is not happening. It just annoys me.
I absolutely despise the moment in a horror film where they decide to split up. And then they decide to split up again and again and again. I think because I find horror movies an unpleasant viewing experience to begin with. So it just amps up the anxiety for me in a way that gets truly unpleasant, because you just want, you want everyone to die because they're stupid, eh? But you also want everyone to live so you can feel better about watching this film. And they're refusing to kind of comply with any of the rules that thinking human beings would comply with, where it's like, okay, we've lost one, let's stick together. And you see it over and over again in movies that aren't necessarily horror films but have horror elements, you know, like with the recent Covenant, Alien Covenant, you know, where again you have people, someone's gone off, I'll go look for them alone. It's that drives me nuts.
You don't like horror movies, but you seem to be exposing yourself to horror. I just have avoided Alien Covenant.
You know, some things happen by accident. I've been afraid of it my entire life, and that just happened because one time, a long time ago, TV3 decided to play them all, and everybody kept talking about them, and that's how, you know, that sort of slow exposure happens. But nevertheless, I mean, that trope just occurs time and time again. Action movies, thrillers, horrors. It is insane.
But tropes are a way of driving the film forward, to drive the story forward. And I suppose for me, I think it's predictable. That's why there's a certain sense of comfort in there. So I agree with you, you know, like whenever I watch a horror movie and the hero or heroine just like wants to go and open the door, and every instinct and everyone in the cinema is like, oh, come on, you know, if it was me, I wouldn't have opened the door.
Nobody would open the door.
But it drives the story forward, because once he opened the door, there's something there, and it's like, there's a scary moment that scares everyone. That's that, and I suppose that's what everyone's looking for. But for me, I think the annoying trope is when there's a Hollywood film and when they film it on location in an Asian country, and then suddenly all the characters on screen can't speak proper English, even if it's set in the modern times. You know,
even if it's in Singapore.
Yeah, really, really bad accent.
And you know the actor speaks perfect English.
Yeah.
Because you can hear them covering up.
Yeah, so that's really annoying for me.
Yeah, yeah. There are little technical things that really upset me. There are types of movies. There's a thing called a wet down, which Hollywood and, well, TV as well does, as instinct. The movie is set in California, but you will see that they have wetted down the road. It never rains in California. And yet, whenever the camera is on, suddenly the roads are all wet. The idea being that the light looks nicer, and it looks... It looks a bigger budget movie. It makes it look bigger budget than it really is.
I do have to say, though, you know, when it comes to tropes, I wonder if we all just, in some ways, sometimes we forgive them easier than others. And I also think that sometimes we see directors and we see interesting people working with it in a more subversive way. And that's the fun part about bad tropes existing. Because if they didn't exist, they wouldn't be there to be played with so instinctively, where you don't have to explain what's going on. You get the irony of the joke, or you get the setup because you get the trope. And, you know, it's the same way as, I suppose, using cliches in an intelligent way or in an ironic way. They're there in some ways to facilitate more interesting conversations. Yeah. Sometimes, not often. But,
are you talking about, for instance, I'm quite looking forward to the new Stranger Things, because Stranger Things plays with the Spielberg type movie tropes.
Well, what I was actually thinking of was Thor Ragnarok, which is directed by someone that we've spoken about on the show before, Taika Waititi, who did, you know, Hunt for the Wilder People. And so he's got this very clever way of playing around with the idea of the buddy comedy, the action film, the superhero film. And those are the things where, because we have that shorthand, we understand the joke that much quicker.
Okay.
So, you know, there's something to be said for the positive side, I suppose, of bad movie tropes.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, good point. Meanwhile, next time I see a thunderstorm happening, and if it's like a horror movie or romantic comedy, I'm going to throw something at the TV.
Manufacture drama in your own life, Cam, to suit the thunderstorms.
Okay.
What are you doing wrong?
Okay. Okay. Now, topic number two, Lynn.
Yes.
Introverts.
Yeah. So I grew up an introvert. I'm still an introvert. I've noticed that in the last, let's say, 5 years, you know, 5 years ago, you'd start to see these articles popping up like, how to care for the introvert in your life? Are you actually an extroverted introvert? And, you know, all these sort of think pieces about what you could be. And that was maybe 5 years ago. And now we're edging into territory where we seem to be celebrating introverts. I follow a meme account on Instagram called My Therapist Says, which I like because it's a little bit cleverer, I suppose, than the average, you know, kind of vomit of memes that you can get on Instagram. And I've noticed that there is this whole celebration of, the joy you feel when that person cancels on you for dinner, or when you tell your friends you're on your way, but in fact, you're sitting there in your towel because you don't want to see people. So there's this notion, and then you see people loving the crap out of these things and going, same, yes, hearts. And I do wonder whether we're kind of at a point now where it used to be that extroverts were everything. You know, they got ahead in life, they had more friends, they were easier to like in the workplace. But now introverts, in some ways, seem to be coming into their own. And I'm just wondering if you guys see the same thing.
I always think that things have happened before many, many times.
Right.
But having said that, the internet does lend itself to enabling, as it were, the introvert in a way that no media ever has before.
Yeah, I'm going to say something quite controversial, and I'm sure you guys are giving like dagger stares. But I kind of don't believe that personalities or even people's characteristic can be reduced to, you know, introversion and it's, I feel that it's quite reductive.
Yeah. I completely agree. When I say I'm an introvert, I'm referring to sort of this one big trait that kind of people use to distinguish the two, and it's whether or not you get... Where do you get your recharge?
Yeah,
do you get recharged from being around other people, or do you get recharged from being at home, you know, and by yourself with your dogs, perhaps? Yeah. that's where I'm kind of going with that, but I completely agree.
Yeah, because I feel that there are certain times when I'm free and on the internet and I will do some of these, you know, quizzes on BuzzFeed or things like that. And then they will say, oh, you are this person, you are that person. And I find myself thinking, I am some aspects of this, I'm some aspects of that. People think that I'm quite extroverted, but actually I feel that I'm quite introverted. But then again, you know, I like socializing. So that's why I kind of don't feel that one should be fit into certain box. But coming back to what you're saying, I do think that the celebration of all these different kinds of personalities is actually a good thing. Because for the longest time, when you are divided into box A or box B, and if you feel like you neither fit here nor there, it can get quite lonely in a sense. But you know, when people are hashtagging themselves, you know, same, yeah, introvert rules and things like that, it actually forms a community, and I think it's a good thing. I think the internet, like you said, Cam, has become that vehicle of people gathering together, even though they are just sitting at home alone and just liking each other's posts, and I think that's great.
I really want to say Big Bang Theory. In that, you know, it's a show that celebrates the kids, geeks, the kids who were beaten up at school, and now they're the stars.
But that's the thing, right? About the internet and about finding your tribe, so to speak. Because I think when we talk about introverts, we're not necessarily talking about Big Bang Theory nerds. You know, they don't traditionally look like that. And if you look at the memes that I see, they tend to be people who look, you know, somewhat happening, you know, dare I say. You know, and the notion is more like, ha, people don't know that I'd rather be at home with a pizza beer and Netflix rather than out at this party. So, you know, it's kind of finding these very particular, and it's also given us a language, right, to identify with. You know, maybe it ends up pigeonholing us a bit too much, but I think specificity is not really a bad thing. We might be in the age of too much specificity, and maybe it'll even out a bit more. But I do find that there is this celebration of something that never used to be celebrated. You know, if you were quiet, your parents would tell you to go talk to people, and now it's like, well. Yeah.
Well, maybe it's as Gray was saying, if we avoid being reductionist for a moment, maybe it's not necessarily celebrating an A or B personality, but aspects of the personality. So shyness. And we're all shy. Quietness, introspection. Maybe it's we're able to celebrate these aspects as opposed to being out there and being great achievers.
Which is really something. I mean, to be able to celebrate something as quote-unquote dull as introspection, to celebrate being at home on a Friday night and going, same, yes, is something, as opposed to going like, yeah, where's the party? You know, it's just a completely different way of... And that's why I'm insisting on using the word celebrate, because it's celebrating something that maybe isn't a personality type, but aren't necessarily traits that people in the past would have been... This makes you a fantastically fun person, and I'm going to like your post on Instagram. You know, now you can just put the dullest crap up, and people are like, yep, same.
I'm going to assume that what Lynn thinks she's spotted is actually for real. And I don't disagree with you. I think that there is that kind of celebration of acceptance.
I like what you say about being alone and recharged. I think everyone needs that. So I would, you know, for one, have pizza and at home and watch a movie on myself, and I recharge that way too. So high five.
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, us retiring wallflowers are going to come back in a moment, and we're going to be action packed with talking about problematic faves here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Rustler, Lee Chui Lin, and Gray Yeo. And now, Gray, something I'd never heard of before, but we had a chat about it, and now I get it. Problematic faves.
Yeah, well, this came about with obviously a lot of things. Over the last week or so, we've heard a lot of incidents about problematic people, and it's come out to the fore a lot, especially on social media. And it got me thinking also when I was listening to another podcast where they mentioned problematic faves. So these are people who may be your favorite people, like it could be a favorite celebrity, writer, author, someone
just usually, historical figure.
Yeah. Someone who is usually quite famous and everyone knows, but has a huge problem. And you kind of realize later in life that it's a big problem and you don't know how to reconcile with it.
The problems being that they might be racist, anti-Semitic, they might be rapists, they might be, have been, you know, just bad people.
Yeah, so I started thinking about whether I have any problematic faves. I can't say that I do. And we've talked a little bit about this as well, maybe because I don't know their problems or whether they are inherently racist or, you know, sexist or homophobic or whatever right now. But yeah, there's a lot of conversations about it. And I wanted to ask both of you whether you have any problematic faves and whether you thought about how you reconcile with problematic faves.
Yeah, Lynn, you must have.
So many. In my life of fandom, so many. Yeah. You know, I've always been somebody who gets really into the entire body of work of somebody that I enjoy. Mm. So if I start reading a writer and it turns out, oh, I like you, I'll read all your books. If I like an actor, I think I've seen all of Johnny Depp's films except the recent run of, even the recent run of Terribleness, I think, on Planes and things like that. Mm. I've seen it. And it broke my heart when it turned out that he is...
wife beater.
Exactly. Mm. And now I can't watch his films. So in some senses, that's not quite the answer because he's not a problematic fave anymore. I guess he was a problematic fave in hiding all those years that I adored him, but I still have people now that I read that I enjoy, and sometimes they say the most just things that you look at and you think, why or how, or, you know, is this the hill you want to die on, basically? And then they seem to say yes and you go, huh, okay, I don't know how I feel about that or how it informs my views of your work.
Well, I've always tried to allow for the fact that everybody's human and everybody does terrible things. And that should not necessarily interfere with my enjoyment of their work. So, for instance, John Lennon. Mm. I mean, I love John Lennon. Great music. He was a terrible husband.
Also wife beater, no? Reported wife beater.
Allegedly.
I mean, he was a man of his time. You know, he was an Englishman of the... of the 1960s, but he was a bad father, terrible father. I mean, a great father to his youngest child, Sean, but to his eldest child, terrible. But, you know, that terribleness, to see beauty in it in a way, he expressed it, he admitted to it in his music.
That's where I think the interesting thing for me is whether, you know, how do we reconcile that? You say that he was a man of his time, of course, you know, it feels like we should forgive him just because of that.
Also, Harvey Weinstein said that recently. I'm a man of my time. I came to, you know, I grew in my career in a time where people could speak to other people like that. And that was, I think, sentence one or sentence two in his apology. Mm. As a woman of this time, I don't know if that's valid. And I love John Lennon. I really do. But I have never been able to reconcile that.
Mm. For me, I thought about actually the one thing you mentioned, Cam, whether it's... that person or their work. So, for example, if we look at Disney, the kind of cartoons that they produce, you know, change a lot of people's lives. People all want to be princesses now. But actually, if you look at it, their work sort of took on from the Brothers Grimm, and they kind of Disney-fied it. And then, you know, you hear stories about Disney as a person is not really, really kind. And it's kind of weird. Another problematic fave, I suppose, for a lot of people is Michael Jackson. You know, the way he lived his life towards the end of it, the way he treated his children and all that. So how do you reconcile their work that, you know, has affected you personally, for example, and then actually find out that actually they're not really great people?
Ignore it.
Right. I mean, I was thinking of Woody Allen, who I think for many... thinking men would be the ultimate problematic fave, you know, this person that they saw so much of themselves in, who may or may not, well, okay, I don't really want to get into the Woody Allen thing, that'll take up the rest of the show, but I mean, it's worth pointing out that for many people, people like Woody Allen and Roman Polanski, they just succeed by dividing the two and saying, like, I'll watch the films, but I don't support the men.
I think mentioning Woody Allen makes sense to me. So, Woody Allen, we have discovered, may have done some terrible things. But, I mean, he did sleep with his, he said, not stepdaughter, and has since married her when she was quite young. And in his movies now, you see really quite old characters like Colin Firth running around with Emma Stone. It just looks weird. It's like, what the hell are you thinking? Mm. But it can never take away, when I watched Manhattan when I was younger in the early 80s, the experience, the sheer joy that I felt watching that movie, it can't detract from that. And if I want to as I do, I want to find that sensation again. I won't necessarily turn to Woody Allen to supply me with that sensation, but other people will. So the sensation I felt, I think, it cannot be tarnished because it happened in a moment in time.
I agree with that. And I think you see that with artists, with people who produce art. But it's different when you talk about thinkers, which is not to say artists are not thinkers, but I'm referring to people for whom their main output is sort of intellectual. You know, it's philosophies or essays. And I think when our thinkers say things that you find reprehensible, that's when it's hard to not let it inform the rest of the work, because that's not art. That's not necessarily something that you can interpret in multiple different ways. You know, this is somebody putting out a very strong point of view, perhaps, and saying, look, this is how I feel. And then later on, you find out that perhaps they're racist, or perhaps when it comes to feminists, they have no intersectionality to speak of. You know, there are so many different ways where a person's failings, their problematicness of the problematic fave, end up poisoning the well, because you just can't look at it any other way.
I think the whole conversation we're having is the kind of thing that annoys the hell out of the Trump Brexit crowd.
Yeah.
And it is the fuel that has made them so angry, in that people seem to be taking away their heroes.
Yeah.
And saying, no, you can no longer look up to, I don't know, that general, that prime minister, because he, in, let's say, Winston Churchill. He seemed to have saved Great Britain. At the same time, he is now being called the man who killed so many million in the Bengal famine. And so, yeah, so the Trumpians and the Brexiters are just enraged by this. And where do they turn? Where do they turn? They turn to these new demagogues to just tell us all to go away.
As opposed to, I guess, accepting the idea that you can't have heroes, maybe. I mean, that's the other way of, as opposed to shifting focus to a new hero, you just maybe go, well, perhaps heroes aren't a thing. I can't have heroes.
Maybe heroic qualities as opposed to a heroic person, per se.
Yeah, I think a lot of it also comes to the fore when you have a lot of men in the issue of a problematic phase. I think I'm struggling to think of women, not to say that I really want to think of a problematic favorite woman. But I think there are some that, you know, consistently in the whole scandal with Hollywood and rape culture, there are also women who, celebrities who are perpetuating, you know, trying to forgive, you know, that kind of, like you said again, men of their time. And I'm struggling to think, I think maybe Charlize Theron was one of them.
Sort of forgave somebody because he said
made some comments. And I think there were some other celebrities who also came and said, well, you know, they were helping people with their career and things like that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of chatter in social media right now. And
at the end of the day, the internet and social media is a 24-hour hate machine. And it'll find and it'll punish. We will all eventually say something that will make us a problem.
Well, I wonder how long that goes on for, though. I mean, not the hate machine. The hate machine goes on, you know, into eternity, will survive us all. But I am curious as to how long someone stays problematic. And I think it depends on the level of realization that you get from it. You know, someone, for example, like she's not a fave of mine, but she's a very interesting person, Lena Dunham, has said some really problematic things. You know, she made racist and sexist remarks about a basketballer who was sitting at the same table as her, you know, and she kind of accused him of ignoring her just because she was white or because of her body type or something like that, when it couldn't possibly be that somebody could be sitting at the same table as her and just not noticing her. And she got rightly called out, because she is a proud feminist, and she got rightly called out for that lack of intersectionality, for understanding where racism and feminism might intersect. And she has kind of come out and really started talking about that. She's held ongoing dialogues. She's talked about the kinds of learnings that she's made since that time. And I think that in many ways, except for a section of the internet that will never like her, and that's fine, you have people not mentioning that anymore, or mentioning that as a learning experience. So I think, yes, the internet's terrible, but I also think that there is the possibility of problematic faves becoming less problematic should they acknowledge it. You don't have to flip overnight, but there has to be a
realization
and an acknowledgement,
or quite the opposite. We've got to move on, but you know, one person who is a fave for a lot of people is Donald Trump, and he's got problem all over him, but he never admits to it, and everybody knows all his various sins, and they're okay with it because he is such a problem. So maybe that's a way to go, to be uber problem, just push your way through all these barriers that we've created for
this
ourselves.
This is where I would like to see a thunderstorm happening.
Yes. So we must move on. And now we move to the final part of the show, recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest. And I'm going to recommend something, and I'm just not sure if I've recommended it before, but it's a YouTube channel, which is just, it's so good. It's called The Great War, and it's all about the First World War, which happened exactly 100 years ago. And it is going from 1914 to 1918, and it's following it week by week, 100 years later. And it is so in-depth. It talks about so many of the characters and aspects on the sides of the conflict, which has shaped our world. It's a terrific channel. It's introduced by a guy called Indy Neidell. He's an American, but he lives in Europe, and it's just terrific. I don't know why they decided to do it, but it must be so much work, and I don't know how they pay for it, but it's fantastic.
When you say they follow, they track week by week, they actually chronologically track
100
years week by week?
Yeah. So each week there's a little show about what happened this week.
Oh, wow.
And then there are other things about technical aspects of, I don't know, say uniforms or equipment or whole theatres of conflict or personalities inside. It's just really good. And he's a very good storyteller. Mm-hmm. So that's The Great War. Lynn.
Okay, I have two. One to do with problematic faves, because my current fave, who has yet to disappoint me, and I suppose I'm putting this out there as a way to curse myself because someone's going to tell me something, but Lin-Manuel Miranda's body of work and Twitter feed is a joy. So just wanted to say that. He is wonderful. He has yet to disappoint me. Please don't. But in the meantime, yes, I've talked about him before. I won't go on, but Lin-Manuel Miranda. And then the second thing was Instagram stories. It's not quite a recommendation, but ever since, as you point out over and over, Cam, I left my entire life behind at BFM, I've found that Instagram stories and commenting on them and messaging people on that medium as opposed to other more traditional forms of text or in-person calls or whatever has been quite a joy to me, because it removes the awkward, hey, how are you? What have you been up to? Because you can leap straight to talking about what that person is doing, what they're up to. It's answered. It's in the story. And you get to get straight to conversation. And I found it a real joy sending sincere compliments and greetings and commenting on people's lives via Instagram stories. I'm not sure people are doing it enough. I think there are a lot of people stalking on Instagram. I don't know how many people are actually then messaging the people that they're stalking. But I found it to be... I guess a source of really good conversations for me.
So, Lynn, imagine you were talking to a person who had absolutely no idea what Instagram stories is. I mean, not me, obviously, I know.
You know, because we've talked you through this.
Oh, obviously, yeah. Obviously. But if there are people out there who are so behind that they don't know these things, what the hell is Instagram stories?
Thank you, Cam, for that very important question. Instagrams are generally things that you take and then they live forever on your feed until you choose to delete them. But Instagram stories are sort of little snapshots of your life that you can just put up that disappear within 24 hours. So they're low commitment, you know, they're sort of usually things people put up that interest them in the moment or that they think are funny, but they don't necessarily think is aesthetically pleasing or they don't necessarily think needs to live on forever. Okay. As part of their online life. So yeah, it's just little snapshots of people living, you know, what they're eating, where they are, who they're seeing. And it's just a really nice way of, I've gotten really nice comments on stories that have resulted in great conversations. And I just don't think people are doing it enough. I think people are viewing the stories, but maybe not necessarily messaging each other. So
okay.
Next step.
Okay, correct. By the way, that is the correct definition of Instagram stories.
And it was a test. I knew it. I knew it.
And how do people find you?
On Instagram stories?
Yeah.
Well, you know, they usually just kind of, if they follow you, it pops up right on top.
Okay, so. I'm exhausted. I'm just exhausted.
Showing our age.
Yeah. Okay, so Instagram stories and Lin-Emmanuel.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Please.
Oh, so you haven't heard about him and the dogfighting?
You know, someone's tried that on me already. Yeah. I don't know why. I think someone else tried the dogfighting.
You'll find out for yourself.
I will never. He's
so,
fine.
So, Gray, what's your recommendation?
I'm going to recommend something to consume as well. I've been listening recently to this podcast called Dissect. I don't know whether it's been recommended on A Bit of Culture before. It's a long-form musical analysis podcast by this guy called Cole Kushner. And he's a musician, but he works primarily, I think his day job is a marketing director for a coffee company or something in the US. But the podcast itself is so fascinating. He actually tears down and really, really dissect everything to do with music. And this current season, he's looking at Kanye West's latest album. And it's really, really good. And the thing about it is that Kanye West, it's not my favorite artist. I listened to him, and when the whole Taylor Swift thing blew up, you know, the world hated him. But not to redeem anything for Kanye West, this podcast actually made me really, really think about his music, because he analyzed, the Cole Kushner analyzed each of the lyrics to sound, to music, to who's the producer, the background of it, and even also hypothesized, you know, some of his, some of Kanye West's thinking that goes into the music. And after listening to just a couple of episodes, I'm convinced that Kanye West is a genius.
Oh.
Like, he's a genius of his time. A double episode on his track analysis of the track Runaway, he really think about how he used philosophical theories to inject it into his music, and really write the lyrics and invite guest stars and guest rappers to reflect on his written words and then come up with their counter narrative and everything. So really, really good.
That sounds terrific.
Yeah, I mean, you should really, really check it out.
Yeah. Does he do anyone other than Kanye West?
Yeah, he does. But right now it's Kanye West's latest album. And it's just fantastic.
Lynn, is that a good...
I'm a long time Kanye West fan and apologist, so this makes me really happy.
That's because he's a fellow introvert, isn't it?
Kanye?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I would not dare to diagnose Kanye with anything. I think best to let him speak for himself.
That sounds terrific, though. Dissect, isn't it?
Dissect. If you search Dissect Podcast, you'll find it really good.
I'll do that. I will do that. Okay, so that's Dissect Podcast, and that brings us to the end of this week's show. Only remains for me now to thank special honored guest, Gray Yeo.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Great to have you. And Lee Tree Lin.
Thank you.
And myself, Cam Rustland. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please like our Facebook page, because, well, you know, just because you should. And if you don't, I will come to your house in the dead of night and I will shine a torch in your face while you're sleeping.
Bad movie trope. There it is.
So, well, that's the end of the show. And so please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%, APR 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.